This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Sleep, sleep, sleep.
That's what I do.
All right, what are you doing? Jake Ugranek is bearing with you guys today. Some fun stories, some right wingers swallowing swords and others upset about it. Definitely some fun stories. A Democrat turns on his wife, that's keeping it classy.
Oh my God. Okay. It's like, it really is a dirtbag story.
Yeah.
It's so amazing.
It is. It's classic. Okay. But first, we stand with the Supreme Court and a country divided. Annika Sperry.
All right. Well, let's talk about what the Supreme Court was up to today. The Supreme Court has been hearing oral arguments in Fisher v. U.S., a case that could determine whether January 6 rioters can be prosecuted using obstruction charges. Now, the outcome of the court's decision not only has implications for the rioters themselves, some of whom have already been convicted and sentenced in the case of obstructing government proceedings, but it could also impact Trump and the indictments he faces.
Yes, I have some surprising opinions on this. So do some of the Supreme Court justices. So this is going to have plenty of twists and turns.
So let's lay out the case for you all, and then we can discuss where we fall on this issue, because it's not as easy as one would think, right? There are implications not just for the rioters themselves, but also potentially peaceful protesters. And so the court seems deeply divided on a federal law that prosecutors in the January 6th case used to charge more than 350 January 6th protesters and rioters. Now, some of the conservative justices are concerned and worried that this form of prosecution would give the government the ability to squash peaceful protests or even those who heckle and disrupt court proceedings. And so they want to ensure that the government doesn't go overboard in punishing individuals who engage in these types of demonstrations. Now, defense attorneys also allege that January 6 prosecutors basically improperly interpreted the law and stretched it to go after these Trump supporters. And more than 120 of the rioters from January 6th have already been convicted of the obstruction charges. 60 of them have already been sentenced. The offense, by the way, is punishable by up to 20 years in prison. However, for first-time offenders, on average, they will get sentenced to around 1 to 4 years in prison. Now, prosecutors like the obstruction charge because it's actually much harsher in sentencing. It gives them more leverage when they're engaging in plea negotiations. So they like to kind of use that as like a threat, the lengthy potential sentence as a threat to what the defendant could face in terms of time behind bars. And then federal rioting, on the other hand, which is something they could be charged with instead, is actually punishable by up to 5 years behind bars. But they don't want to use that because they feel that they don't have as much leverage in plea negotiations by using that charge instead. Now, Washington Post reports that without the obstruction charge, prosecutors would struggle to find charges punishable by more than a year in prison. Felony counts, in other words, for even the most notorious nonviolent conduct by riot participants who raided the Senate floor, hunted for lawmakers, chased police officers, and ransacked congressional offices. And so some are concerned that if the court rules against prosecutor's ability to use the obstruction charge as it pertains to the January 6th rioters, well, then a lot of them will be let off easy. And to be sure, even before the Supreme Court has decided this case, Cenk, three of the January 6th defendants have already had their sentences reduced ahead of the Supreme Court's decision. All three, well, two of the individuals are from Delaware, a Delaware man who carried a Confederate flag into the Capitol and will be let go 1 year into his 3-year term. You also have an Ohio man who overran police lines and became one of the first rioters to enter the Capitol building. He will be set free 6 months into a 19-month term. And then finally, a man who entered the just evacuated Senate chamber with a Trump flag and a cape. He was released after serving 5 months of a 14-month term. So some are already having their sentences reduced. But I'm really curious where you stand on this issue, Cenk.
Yeah, I think this one's complicated, and it a lot of things depend. So let's break it down. Number one, the question is, first question is, should this charge even exist? And my answer to that is yes, it should exist. Because the original idea was, if you're trying to block government from doing its official duties as part of, it's under the umbrella of rebellion, right? And so we've got people who are insurrectionists, and part of what they're doing is they're preventing Congress from their proceedings and trying to undermine the United States government. And it doesn't just have to be Congress, but that's why it's such a serious charge. But the huge but is, what do you apply it to? So if you're applying it to something that is actually an act, an overt physical act against our government, that makes sense. If you're applying it to just protesters who are rowdy, that's a disaster. Right. Don't do that, right? And so then it is a legitimate discussion for the Supreme Court to have. Yes, but where do we draw the line? What do these words that are not super clear mean, and how do you apply them? So for example, if you're on the left, be careful what your opinion here is. I know a lot of people love to do the binary stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay, January 6th, right wing, so we are against it, so we love this law. But hold on, what if you're a pro-peace protester who's protesting what's happening in Gaza, and you block City Hall, and you were a little too aggressive, and all of a sudden they put obstructing government charge on you.
Right.
And that's a 20-year charge.
I mean, another example would be, you know, let's think of it in a hyper-local scenario where, let's say, the city council is trying to hold their regular city council meeting. A rowdy group of activists show up, and they're so aggressive that it shuts down the city council meeting altogether. You know, I think about cases like that because I want to think about this in a, I want to think about these laws being applied to people that I might agree with politically. And to be honest with you, even when it pertains to people who I tend to agree with politically, it does bother me when their form of protest is specifically meant to shut a government proceeding down.
But would you agree with me that 20 years for that is insanity?
I do agree with you on that. Okay. I think 20 years is absolutely insanity, yes.
Yeah. And even if they're not getting 20 years, which these guys aren't, right? In reality, they're getting about a couple of years and being let off early at that anyway. But still, you have the potential to get 20 years. And by the way, if you're protesting on behalf of Palestinian rights, you're probably gonna get 20 years if they apply this to you, right? Because you get different standards for different political folks, and everybody in the country that isn't asleep knows that, right? So, okay, so let's be really careful with this law. So were they careful in this law? Okay, now I have a different opinion than the Supreme Court justices. The Supreme Court justices, for two of them, Alito and Thomas, be gay is a problem for them. I'm gonna explain what that means in a second. Okay,
No, I'm dying to know, I'm curious what
you
mean.
Okay, all right, yeah. So then I'll interweave both of those things. So Begay is a earlier case, just happens to be the name of the case, that Alito and Thomas said, oh, broad construction of criminal statutes, great, no problem. Because they're right wingers, so they wanna punish people as much as humanly possible. And they're the most extreme right wingers. So they're like, otherwise, what does the word otherwise mean? It means drunk driving. And other people are like, you sure it means drunk driving? They're like, yeah, good enough, put him behind bars. But now the criminals are on their side. So all of a sudden they're like, I don't know that Begay is applicable here. I don't know that would, I mean, I would distinguish it from using other words. All of a sudden, right? So these are the problems with justices that don't actually have any principles. They've been pretending to have principles all along, like states' rights. Come on, that's such a joke now. No one believes that anyone's ever applied states' rights in a principled fashion. Okay, so that's a problem for them. But something that's a saving grace for the right-wing judges, justices who want to rule on behalf of the January 6th defendants, and appears based on their questioning that they do want to vote in that favor. That's why Alito and Thomas are like, I don't know that it applies here. In other words, okay, you want to let these guys off, and it's pretty obvious.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Jump in with some caveats and nuances, because it's not that their line of questioning doesn't necessarily indicate that they want to let the rioters off per se.
Lower
charges. They're arguing that there are other charges that could be implemented. It's just that the prosecutors don't want to use those charges because they carry a lower sentence.
Yeah.
Right?
So, and again, I don't begrudge them the discussion and the debate, because I think it is an important discussion and debate. I'll tell you which side I'm going to come out in a second. But one last thing for the justices that are important, the ones who do want to lower the charges against these January 6th guys, they have a couple of huge cases in their favor. And that is the bribery cases. Since the Supreme Court loves bribery, in Citizens United, they made bribery legal. You just have to call it a campaign contribution, but they did that also in Buckley and Bellotti all the way back in the 1970s. But in the latest round of cases, Governor McDonnell in Virginia and Governor Christie and his goons, I mean advisors in New Jersey, were up on some bribery charges, not Christie, but his advisors. And the Supreme Court's like, oh, those are Republican governors, and we love bribery. No way we're convicting them. So they're like, really narrow interpretation of the law, okay? Mm-hmm. So whenever they want to punish you for drunk driving or anything else, they're going to have a really broad interpretation. When it comes to their beloved crooked politicians or right-wing activists, very narrow definition. No, we don't charge him with bribery. I mean, all he did was take all his watch and money and et cetera.
True, you're right.
So those are precedents that are on the side of the January 6th guys. Congratulations, you're on the side of the officials who got bribed. Anyways, okay. But there's more nuance.
Okay, so let me interject with a question. However, if the Supreme Court, if the conservative justices decide this case in a way that we are both predicting, in that they will say that the prosecution should not have used this law, this obstruction law against the rioters, wouldn't that also set a precedent that would then protect other demonstrators regardless of what their political ideology happens to be?
Yeah, it would theoretically, and I would be in favor of that, and that's what's going to be the nuance. But you know how America is. If you're a right-wing protest, that's the reason they're so mad about January 6th, is it's the first time the right-wing has ever been held accountable for anything, right? Whereas if you're a left-wing protester and you're like, hey, oil companies, can you please not kill us all? They're like, that's it, lock them up, throw away the key. In fact, several states have passed laws saying you could run over as protesters. They, I mean, of course not right-wing protesters, but if they're left-wing or in favor of peace, or the planet or something, just run them over and kill them, who cares, right? So how will it be applied is also a giant question. Okay, finally, my opinion is, guys, if you're going to apply this statute, you have to show that it was part of an orchestrated movement to make sure that the government did not function. Not like, hey, a bunch of January 6th guys got riled up by Trump, and then they broke in and, you know, try to go to the bathroom in Nancy Pelosi's office. Okay, that's bad, but those are other charges, right? But if it is coordinated, which by the way, I think it was, another caveat coming up on that, but it coordinated to block these proceedings so they could send it back to the states where they had their fake electors ready, and then send those to Congress and have the Republicans in Congress in the House just declare Trump the president. Well, then it was obstruction of the government, and it was part of a big plot to do a coup. Now, but the main question there, guys, is was there a plan and was there intent?
Right.
And the number one problem with that is that people in power hate prosecuting the elites. So the January 6th guys who have been prosecuted, all non-elites, super easy to put them away.
Ordinary people, yeah.
Yeah, ordinary people, you can stuff them into prison all day, all night. It used to be just left wingers, but congratulations, right wingers. Now you can also be stuffed into prison. But your leaders, oh no, 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 no. Why haven't they brought charges against Navarro? I mean, Navarro is now in jail for another reason, because he refused to comply with a subpoena.
Contempt of Congress. Okay,
right. But they've never charged him with the plot he wrote about in a book,
yeah,
where they would have the rioters go in. Basically, this is the essence of the plan cobbled together from several sources, where they would go in, they would block the proceedings, so the Republicans go, I guess we gotta go back to the states, etc., etc. So don't like, and so the Proud Boy leader was charged, the Oath Keeper leader was charged, but the government never connected them to the fake elector plot, which was the actual coup.
Right.
So yeah, if you're not gonna charge the elites who actually orchestrated this coup, then you don't get to make this charge against the regular schmoes who broke into Congress. So if they overturn this and say, no, this charge does not apply to these guys, it could, but I agree with them that it shouldn't in this case, because the government never charged the leaders of this. And if you didn't charge the leaders and you didn't prove a conspiracy to obstruct the government, then you shouldn't apply this to the average guy who made a colossal error and broke other laws and should be held accountable, but not accountable for this depth of charge, this serious a charge.
This is what I think.
Uh-oh, here it comes.
Counsel Uger, you make a compelling case, and I think I agree with you entirely.
Yeah, that's not really how judges rule, but okay.
I did my best, okay? I didn't go to Columbia Law School here, all right?
No, 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 you're supposed to have, here, give the answer.
Yeah, okay. you show us who you got that fancy degree for.
Okay, busted, okay. Okay, Counsel Uger, not guilty. Wait, that's, he's counsel, not, all right, never mind. I just wanted to have fun.
All right. Well, we've got a lot more news to get to. Before we do, though, Cenk has one more thing to mention.
No, I just wanted to say, Hashtag fairest show in America.
All right, well, I wanted to talk about the updates to Senator Bob Menendez's bribery case. We're gonna take a brief break and do that story when we come back. But man, if you want a perfect encapsulation of there's no honor among thieves, this is it, and you don't wanna miss it. Come right back.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
All right, back on TYT, Cenk, Anna, and Chris DeLoach. Chris is the hero that hit the join button below. Come become a member of TYT, make a huge difference. We're trying to get to 100,000 subscribers and $1 million so we could stay in business. Obviously, the media is going through some really tough times these days. So tyt.com/team to either contribute or to join as well. And I'll read one comment because it's the comment of the day. Rome DeJuan writes in, Anna is hilarious.
Well, thank you. I was waiting for someone to realize that.
Okay, okay, all right, well, we've got one on the board.
Thank you.
All right, God bless. What's next?
Well, the next story, I guess, kind of hilarious if you consider how loathsome this guy is, but not so hilarious for his wife. Let's talk about Bob Menendez. Democratic Senator Bob Menendez, who is in fact facing federal corruption charges for the second time, is now considering throwing his wife Nadine under the bus. That's what he's gonna do. Maybe. Okay, this is according to newly released court filings. And the only reason why we have access to the court filings is because a group of journalists fought to make them public. But here's what we know. So Menendez may claim that she, his wife, hid information from him, leading him to believe that nothing unlawful was taking place, according to court papers unsealed on Tuesday. Now, if you're wondering, well, what exactly did he engage in? He is accused of essentially selling his influence in order to get bribes from foreign governments, including Egypt and Qatar. So as the person who used to be the chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he had to step down from that position because of these new charges. You would think that he would understand that by doing these deals and taking money and gold bars from foreign entities, he's probably doing something wrong. I mean, I don't think I would need my partner to mislead me to engage in that activity, not knowing that it's wrong. It's wrong, you know it's wrong. Like, it's ridiculous to throw his wife under the bus.
Yeah.
And by the way, his wife is corrupt. She's facing charges herself. She's gonna be tried in a separate trial. But I just find it so, this is a perfect example, no honor among thieves.
Yes, but there's might be a couple of legal reasons why they're doing this. But I do love the idea that Bob Menendez was like, I don't know where all those gold bars came from. And I just never even asked. I mean, there was gold bars all over the house. And I just figured, you know, she was into gold.
Listen, nothing suspicious about having gold bars in your home. I mean, everyone does it, don't they?
Yeah, and I think the money was stuffed into his suits. So when he put on his suit, was he like, huh? My wife stuffed it with money again. I guess that's how she likes to, you know, decorate or something. It never occurred to him that it might be corruption.
So there's more. So the revelation that he might throw his wife under the bus was contained in two sentences in a legal brief filed by Mr. Menendez's lawyers, who had asked a judge to keep them secret because they detailed a trial strategy that, if made public, would surely garner significant media attention, correct, and bias the jury pool. That I don't know about. Now, according to the newly unsealed sentences, Menendez may testify at his trial, and if he does, he would disclose communications with his wife, Ms. Menendez, that would tend to exonerate him, but may incriminate his wife. So here's the wording from the exact wording from the filing itself. While these explanations and the marital communications on which they rely will tend to exonerate Senator Menendez by demonstrating the absence of any improper intent on Senator Menendez's part, they may inculpate Nadine by demonstrating the ways in which she withheld information from Senator Menendez or otherwise led him to believe that nothing unlawful was taking place, the documents state. That manipulative, tricky, sketchy wife. That poor Bob Menendez, he didn't do anything wrong. He was just led astray by that naughty, naughty wife.
Yeah.
Come on.
First of all, it seems really classy.
Right.
Right. And if you're gonna stay in politics too, that's the best way to go. Hey guys, look, it wasn't me, it was my goddamn wife. You know, hashtag family values. Okay, so now look, there's a couple of reasons why they might be doing this. Since they're in split trials, there's some chance that Menendez will say, it was my wife. And then when her trial starts after his, if he gets acquitted, they then turn around and go, no, it was Bob. But remember, you can't try someone for the same crime twice, mm-hmm. right? So then they could go, ha ha, messing with you, it doesn't matter that we're lying. Okay, try us on perjury, which is a much lower charge. And you're gonna be much more reluctant to try a senator on a low charge like perjury if they mix up their stories. And of course, they're not just gonna say, it was my wife, no, it was me. They're gonna use language that's gonna make it kind of fuzzy around the edges. So maybe they could avoid a perjury charge too. So I don't know that they're gonna do that for sure, but that is one reason they might be doing this. Another reason is that you have a privilege when you're married, like you do with a doctor or a lawyer, but those privileges are complicated. They're not blanket privileges, but in this case, it's possible that he could say, it was my wife. She uses spousal privilege not to testify.
Oh.
And then everybody thinks it was the wife. And then at her trial, they do the same exact trick. She says, it was my husband. He chooses spousal privilege not to testify. And then they both get off.
Oh my God.
Okay. And remember, the two juries are gonna have no connection. They're not gonna know each other. They're not gonna know the other cases.
Oh.
And so they could be totally in the dark, and one jury could really think it was the wife and acquit the husband, and the other jury could really think that it was the husband and acquit the wife.
So don't get fooled by the negative optics for Bob Menendez in attempting this strategy. This strategy might actually be something that he and his wife have consulted each other on, each other on, and have decided this as a strategy to essentially get off.
100%. So wow. Now look, it's 100% possibility. It's not definite. Number one, we don't know their intent yet. We only know what's been leaked. Number two, there is another possibility, which is that he's a slimy, slimy politician who stuffs gold bullion into his pants. So like the idea of betraying his wife is Tuesday for him and doesn't think twice about it. But the reason why I don't think it's that is because they don't seem to have an acrimonious relationship right now. They're not getting divorced. They're not separated. They don't, publicly at least, there doesn't seem to be a divide between them.
They seem thick as thieves.
If you will, mm-hmm. Exactly. And so, and if they stay married, they get to use the privilege. So the fact that they aren't separated or divorced, especially after this traumatic event. Remember, if it was just one of them and the other one was surprised by it, would you stay in that marriage? Would you be like, are you kidding me? I'm a US senator and you went around my back and took all these bribes and people think it's me? What the hell did you do that for? Does it look like Menendez is having that reaction? It doesn't look like it,
no,
right?
No.
So this is probably just a weaselly, slimy trick by one of the grossest politicians in America to try to avoid responsibility for what looks like obvious over the top bribes that he took from foreign governments.
That's so disgusting. Well, we'll see if Cenk's prediction comes to fruition. But for now, he looks like a slime ball. He is a slime ball. The fact that he was previously charged with federal corruption charges and got off, this was back in 2015, because the jury couldn't come to an agreement about him being guilty, is so infuriating. And if he gets off again because of this legal strategy, that would also be incredibly infuriating.
And last thing, guys, remember the Supreme Court loves bribery. So if he appeals it all the way to the Supreme Court, they've already legalized bribery for campaign contributions, independent expenditures, and all of those things. But on top of that, when there's been brazen bribery, Governor McDonnell in Virginia, Governor Christie's associates in New Jersey, the Supreme Court each time has said, I don't see any bribes. Hey, you know what? Wealthy donors stuffing the pockets of politicians or Supreme Court justices, giving them fancy vacations and fancy presents. That's not bribery, no way. So if Alito and Thomas and all those guys also have gold bullion in their closet and money stuffed into their suits, if Menendez, who's a Democrat, goes all the way up to the Supreme Court, they might still be like, I don't see any bribery. Nope, nope, free to go. All the elites are always free to go.
All right, well, let's move on to some other news, including how, Republicans feel protesters should be treated in the United States, especially the protesters they disagree with. Let's get to it.
So you're obviously saying that in your state, you would deal with this much differently. As you heard from Paul Morrow, speaking from a law enforcement perspective, they know that there's cameras on them. They know that they can't obviously hurt somebody in the removal of these protesters. There's obviously a very delicate balance to dealing with this. And the longer it goes on, it would appear the longer it's going to take to resolve it.
Well, it turns out that Republican Senator Tom Cotton does not believe it should take a long time to rid cities of pro-Palestinian protesters who have been blocking traffic in major cities. Now, his solution is to allow for ordinary citizens to engage in violence, to meet these protesters with violence. And if you think I'm exaggerating in my interpretation of what he said, well, why don't you hear it for yourselves?
If something like this happened in Arkansas on a bridge there, let's just say I think there'd be a lot of very wet criminals that have been tossed overboard, not by law enforcement, but by the people whose road they're blocking. If they glued their hands to a car or the pavement, well, probably pretty painful to have their skin ripped off. But I think that's the way we'd handle it in Arkansas. And I would encourage most people anywhere that get stuck behind criminals like this who are trying to block traffic to take matters in their own hands. There's only usually a few of them, and there's a lot of people being inconvenienced. It's time to put an end to this nonsense.
Luckily, people who were understandably furious with the protesters blocking them from being able to get to work or wherever they needed to go did not engage in violence against the protesters. However, Cotton does seem to love the idea of treating protesters violently. If you can recall, back in June of 2020, as mass protests and yes, some riots were underway in the country in response to the murder of George Floyd, Cotton essentially called for the military to get involved to squash the demonstrations. He wrote about it in an op-ed, a very controversial op-ed published in the New York Times titled "Send in the Troops." And so, look, I'm not surprised at what Tom Cotton is saying. I think that, I mean, that's not a solution, right? Like, I totally understand how problematic it is when there's like a concerted effort to block major, transportation infrastructure in major cities. It's unsafe. It can be enraging for people. And honestly, I don't think it's smart as a strategy if you're trying to win hearts and minds on this issue. But nonetheless, putting that aside, the solution isn't allowing ordinary citizens to meet those protesters with violence. That's not what a leader calls for. It's not what a leader advocates for. It's better to find solutions. That's not what he's interested in here.
Okay, so let's clarify a couple things that are obvious and then get into the harder issues. So number one, Tom Cotton just called for vigilante violence, period.
Yep.
And so if AOC had said, hey, if you see a MAGA protester, rough them up, beat them up, throw them off a bridge if you have to, rip off their skin if you have to. People would talk about that, not just for years, but literally for decades. A Republican does it, it's almost out of the news cycle. Like nobody's talking about it anymore. Like we're covering it at the end of the news cycle about Tom Cotton, and almost no one will ever mention it again. Because that's normal for a Republican legislator to say, hey, if you don't agree with someone, physically assault them, harm them, do violence against them. I authorize vigilante violence. Come on, guys. You're telling me that's not true? First of all, you just heard it.
Yeah.
So it's 100% true. And it happens again and again and again with the Republicans who encourage violence from their own side.
I know. And it's just, it's such a dangerous thing to advocate for on national television, no less, because understand if you happen to be one of the people who's trying to get wherever you need to go. I mean, it was during rush hour traffic as people were trying to get to work, right? You're already furious about it. And then you hear a United States senator in your head telling you, go for it, go for it. You're enraged. Do what you really want to do. And that's a dangerous situation to set up.
Okay, I'm going to prove my point in three different ways. Number one, right now, every right winger is screaming into their screen, whichever screen they're watching on, going, oh, it already happened, man, Maxine Waters. See, she said, push the right wing guys. And it was open to interpretation if she meant push them in terms of rhetoric or physically. They assumed it was physical. And by the way, I kind of agree with you, and that's why I said at the time, Maxine Waters was wrong for saying that, right?
Yeah.
Because we're actually principled.
Mm-hmm.
And that was however, like half a decade ago or something, and every right winger was like, Maxine Waters, see, I told you you wouldn't forget. Even the subtlest reference by a left winger, and you guys have held on to it for your entire lives, right?
Yeah.
And you'll remember it 50 years from now. But when your own politicians call for violence over and over and over again, you're like, whatever, whatever, it doesn't count. Okay, so keep it real. Can you guys be honest for once?
Yeah, look, I just want elected lawmakers, people who are supposed to be leaders in this country, to to actually lead and turn the temperature down.
Yes.
Okay? Turn the temperature down.
And that's why we criticize Maxine Waters.
Yeah.
Don't go around talking about pushing people. It could be open to very bad misinterpretation. And I don't even know what she interpreted. See, but that requires people to be honest and consistent with their views. So now imagine again if a Democrat had said about your beloved January 6th rioters. If you see a January 6th rioter and he's blocking your way, punch him in the face or throw him off a goddamn bridge, rip his skin off. You guys are like, those January 6th guys are hostages by the deep state. They should be treated with pillows and other puffy things like marshmallows, right? But a left winger, oh yeah, throw him off the goddamn bridge. And by the way, he's like, oh, you know what we'd do in Arkansas? Yeah, I know, Tom, what you would do in Arkansas. When you talk about ripping people's skin off, you used to do that back in the day in Arkansas with a whip. So this is the worst possible way of treating the situation down. The country's already in a tinderbox situation.
Yeah.
We've got, you know, giant percentages of Republicans and a significant percentage of Democrats and independents saying that it might be time for violence. So Tom Cotton comes out here and goes, do it, do the violence. He's a piece of crap. He's one of the worst guys in Congress. He's loathsome. Now, last example to prove my case. Now, what's he worried about here? Why does he think you should do physical violence against one another? Because of gridlock, because the roads are, you know, blocked up and everybody's frustrated. Wait, there's another kind of gridlock we're frustrated by. Congressional gridlock. The whole country is very, very frustrated by the left wing, right wing, everybody is. So should we do violence against congressional members, senators, because we're frustrated by gridlock? My answer is no, do not do that. But when it comes to Tom Cotton, he says, if you see a left wing protester or the worst thing ever for a US senator, a pro-Palestinian protester, I mean, they didn't even take money from AIPAC, do violence. But when it comes to him, how dare you? How dare you, right? So this is the kind of liar, hypocrite, disgusting fascist that Tom Cotton is. Yes, when you have government officials saying, I want my side to be brown shirts and go physically assault the other side, that is a definition of a fascist. That's who Tom Cotton is. Okay, last thing is, okay, but how about the hard question of what do we do if we're deeply frustrated? And here you don't have to be a left winger at all. Tons of right wingers are now anti-war, right? And by the way, anti-spending our tax dollars on tax day, you know, when these protests happen, our tax dollars going to Israel. And they've got universal health care, they've got paid family leave, let alone the fact that it's being used to kill Palestinians. I don't know, you know, some of the right wing care about that, but mainly they don't want our money going there and they don't want our troops going there.
Right.
So what if they're part of the protest? Are we supposed to manhandle them too? Tom Cotton, if you've got MAGA guys who are anti-war in your district and they're doing an anti-war protest, especially because they don't want you, since you're so incredibly corrupt and you can't wait to send the money over to Israel because of your donors, and they're doing a protest of you, are people allowed to assault MAGA guys? Are they allowed to assault right wingers who are anti-war? Where do we draw the line here?
I draw the line at manhandling in the bedroom and that's it. Okay, no manhandling on our streets.
Okay.
No violence on our streets. Look, I get it. I understand and I actually largely agree with the critics of this form of protest because again, I just don't know what they think this is actually accomplishing, right? It's making people furious with pro-Palestinian protesters. And I don't think that it's persuading anyone to do anything that would be favorable to the Palestinian side. But with that said, again, we need to find a better solution than to just resort to vigilante violence against the protesters who are engaging in demonstrations in a way that people don't favor.
Yeah, so look, I pose a hard question to Tom Cotton there about what if it's his voters. I don't know if he thinks about. I don't know that he thinks it's that hard. He's like, wait, AIPAC, what do you want me to do to them? Oh, they're my voters, who cares? Should I rough them up? Let's rough them up. Yeah, AIPAC, it says we should rough you up. So that's probably not a hard question for Tom Cotton. Now, hard question for us is, I care deeply about peace, anti-war, and our money not going over to Israel to drop bombs on innocent civilians. So how do we protest? I love that there are protests, and I want those protests to be as large as humanly possible. But when you do block the streets and the bridges, there is, of course, the one thing you get is you get attention. And that's why they do it. And what they're saying is, you're slightly inconvenienced. Imagine what it feels like to be a Palestinian whose kids are starving to death right now. You want to talk about inconvenience? Okay, fair point. But the result of that action is everyone in that town being frustrated with you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Rather than sympathizing with you. You want to get attention in a way that creates sympathy, not antipathy. And I get it, protesters, it's super hard. And I appreciate that you're doing everything you can to save lives. Look, I don't know that this is effective enough, but I would much rather our protesters surround the state capitals, surround the capital in DC, and say, stop sending our money to kill other human beings.
And obviously peacefully, right? Because once you engage in violence, I mean, you lose the moral high ground, and all the media is gonna focus on is the fact that there was violence. And look, there was no violence in the mass protests that took place yesterday. The blocking of roads in major cities. San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge is an example. The entrance to Chicago's, so that's a Golden Gate Bridge. Then you also have the entrance to Chicago's O'Hare International Airport, which we showed you footage of earlier. The expressway leading to Seattle-Tacoma International Airport in Washington. Similar protests seen in Philly, Miami, San Antonio. And if you're wondering, why there was this orchestrated effort in major cities across the country on April 15th, it did have something to do with Tax Day, and there's an economic component to what they're doing. The protests coinciding with Tax Day in the US were part of a 15 economic blockade, a Palestinian international solidarity movement. In each city, we will identify and blockade major choke points in the economy, focusing on points of production and circulation with the aim of causing the most economic impact, its website said. So that was the reasoning behind it. But again, I mean, if you saw the footage we showed you earlier of people who were trying to get to O'Hare Airport, you see how angry they are. They get out of their cars and they're literally trying to walk to the airport. One of the women is seen, giving the protesters a middle finger. So it draws negative attention, and I'm not sure how effective that is. At the same time, these are people who are, actually putting action behind their cause and doing something. So I respect that they want to do something, and I agree with them on the issue. I just don't know if this is the best strategy to get what you want.
Yeah, real quick. So to me, targeting the government as opposed to your fellow citizens, or did never ever target based on religion, ethnicity, background, etc., is the better way to go. Do not break into government buildings. That's a terrible idea. Do not physically do anything to anyone. But to me, obstructing the government, as in saying, hey, I'm lodging a protest here, not actually physically obstructing their entrance into the building or any other way, is a great form of protest, especially on Tax Day, because I want them protesting, no question about it. And so thank you for making that great effort to at least get people's attention to this. And guys, last thing is, politics in America has begun to be very different than what we grew up with.
Yep.
All the alliances and allegiances are now shifting. So here, I don't actually criticize the right wing, because I might be missing it, but I have not seen them have an over the top reaction to this yet. I'm sure some of them have, right? But the Republicans, which is a difference now, because now they're against their own base too. The Republican politicians are like, how dare you do anything to those beautiful January 6th hostages slash tourists slash Antifa, right? So we have to protect them with our hearts and souls. All they did was break into the building, threaten people's lives, threaten the murder of the vice president, etc. But if you're for peace and you're a left-wing protester, crack their skulls, rip their skin, throw them off a bridge, and assault them any way you like. So that's the hypocrisy of the Republican politicians today.
Right. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we have some drama brewing at the University of Southern California, where a valedictorian speech has been canceled because some students don't like her political views. That and more coming up. Don't miss it.
Back back on TYT, Cenk, Anna, and Benjamin Morrill, who gifted a membership, and Phil, who gifted 10. You guys are awesome. If you want to contribute or become a member, tyt.com/team, and come and find out how we're trying to spread joy in the world. That's our Tuesday bonus episode for members. Anna.
All right. Well, graduation's coming up, and all of a sudden, bunch of drama at USC. So, the University of Southern California has canceled a valedictorian's graduation speech over the tender sensitivities of some of the students who do not like her pro-Palestinian political views. Her name is Asna Tabassum. And according to USA Today, the Los Angeles school, USC of course, revealed that Asna Tabassum, a fourth year student from Chino Hills, California, was selected as a valedictorian and would give a speech alongside two salutatorians. In a news release on Monday though, the university said that she would no longer speak at the ceremony after a discussion about her selection took on, quote, an alarming tenor, end quote.
Yeah,
alarming tenor.
I wonder how, who was alarmed by it. I'm positive it's not the donors. We'll talk about how the USC administrators are anti-Semites in a second.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Okay. Well, USA Today also reports that USC cited, quote, substantial risks relating to security over social media chatter surrounding the Israel-Hamas conflict. So they're arguing that, you know, they saw some stuff online that makes them concerned about the safety of those who attend the graduation ceremony. Among the calls against her as a graduation speaker were student group Trojans for Israel, who said her selection turned an inclusive and meaningful milestone into an unwelcoming and intolerant environment for Jewish graduates and their families. So, okay, let me understand something. It's a speech, it's a valedictorian speech at a graduation event. They just don't like some of her political views. Now let me ask, if there was a pro-Palestinian student group and the valedictorian happened to be a Zionist, someone who is a firm believer in the establishment of Israel and everything that Israel has done, would you be in favor of Palestinian students squashing that valedictorian's ability to speak? I would not be okay with that. The valedictorian should be allowed to speak. I don't give a damn what their political views happen to be.
Yeah, so I agree, and I'm gonna get to that too. And in fact, I wanna talk about an Armenian valedictorian in a second, and that could be interesting as well. But first, let's break down what happened here. The USC administrators say that they were also concerned about violence and security and safety for everyone involved, because this is such a touchy subject.
Right, well, to be fair, USC doesn't really have the resources to ensure that they have appropriate security to keep everyone at the event safe.
Right, I mean, it's known as the University of Spoiled Children, but it doesn't have enough resources to provide security, apparently. But wait a minute, it's someone who believes in Palestinian rights who is speaking. So you're concerned that, what, Jewish students or Jewish parents are gonna be violent towards her? That seems pretty anti-Semitic. What do you mean violence? I mean, why would the Palestinians create violence? Or the students that are in favor of not murdering Palestinians be cause violence? They're on her side. So are you blaming the Jews here? Is that what the USC administrator is doing? It sounds like it. I mean, if you had a secret reason, which was your donors love cancel culture and wanted to cancel her speech because they were concerned that it might lightly criticize Israel, I mean, that would be illegitimate. I'm sure that's not it, right? So you guys must be anti-Semites. Do you think the Jewish parents are gonna jump out of their seats and attack her? Is that what you think?
By the way, so let's get into her pro-Palestinian, I guess, takes, even though none of the reporting pointed to any of her takes. It just pointed to her bio on social media and how some of the students, parents and others had a problem with it. Apparently her Instagram bio in particular includes links to a pro-Palestinian website.
How dare she? Doesn't she know she'll be canceled if she has the wrong opinions? Supporting human rights even for Palestinians? This sounds really unwelcoming and intolerant.
So Andrew Guzman, who is the USC provost, says the intensity of feelings fueled by Both social media and the ongoing conflict in the Middle East has grown to include many voices outside of USC and has escalated to the point of creating substantial risks relating to security and disruption at commencement.
Anti-Semite Andrew Guzman thinks that Jewish people are going to attack the valedictorian. That's ridiculous.
Honestly, the way that I read this, unless there's other information that might come out later, but for now, based on the reporting that's been published, right? This to me appears to be a situation where USC is just scared that they're going to make headlines for some sort of controversy that occurs.
No
during
way.
The, really? You think that it's specifically donors?
One, okay. And alumni.
Okay, so we'll get to that in a moment. Well, alumni are complaining about her, so you're not
of
wrong.
Course, yeah. Of yeah. course.
So by the way, one more quote from Guzman who says, this decision is not only necessary to maintain the safety of our campus and students, but is consistent with the fundamental legal obligation, including the expectations of federal regulators, that universities act to protect students and keep our campus community safe.
Who are you calling violent, Andrew Guzman? Please clarify. Are you calling the Arabs an Arab supporter? Violent or Jews and Jewish supporters violent? Who are you calling violent? Because if you're going to say you canceled it because of security concerns, you have to clarify who do you think is going to cause the violence. Go ahead and be racist or anti-Semitic. Go ahead, I dare you. No, this is nonsense, guys. Every university that has one group that they care the most about, and that is alumni donors. And every university has different alumni donors, okay? And in the South, it's mainly evangelicals and Baptists, etc. And USC is incredibly diverse, incredibly diverse. They have a lot of different alumni with a lot of different interests. But do they have some alumni that are in the Israel protection business? Of course they do. And that's normal. And they're not any more stronger than anyone else. There's no conspiracy. They're just saying, hey, listen, I don't like this. I don't want to come to a graduation and hear an anti-Israel speech when my daughter is graduating and I love this place and I love going here and I don't want to feel like I'm going to listen to a sermon here. Well, I want the Palestinians dead and I don't want anybody complaining about it and ruining my beautiful day when my daughter is graduating, okay? Don't inconvenience me. We're in the middle of slaughtering Palestinians here, okay? And your inconvenience is bothering me on a beautiful graduation day. Just let him kill him and don't ever dare speak out against it. Okay, guys, is there legitimate concerns though about what's going on campuses? Yes, there are legitimate concerns. So my nephew is Jewish and where he's going to college right now, they're throwing eggs at the Hillel building.
Unacceptable.
Totally unacceptable. Yeah. They're harassing some of the Orthodox kids going into the Hillel building. So I get it, I get it. And if you're mad about that or you're concerned about that, you should be. And we should all rally to make sure that every student is safe. But when you're canceling preemptively the speech, just the words of the valedictorian who earned it. Think about if the shoe was on the other foot. Imagine that it was a Jewish valedictorian and Palestinians and other people objected and said, no, there might be violence if this Jew speaks. We don't want to hear a pro-Israel speech, ban her. We don't care that she was the smartest, best student we had at this university. We want her banned because she has a pro-Israel point of view. You're telling me you'd be okay with that?
I mean, we wouldn't be okay with that.
I wouldn't be okay with that. I would find that outrageous.
Absolutely.
Outrageous. But USC and apparently a lot of their alumni think, hey, if we're banning speakers that are fighting for human rights for Palestinians, bravo. I don't want to be made uncomfortable, right? But if you ban one of ours, how dare you? And probably they'll get the provost fired if that were to happen. And again, it's just because I get it. People want to, I want to protect my nephew, right? We want to protect our interests, but you're going too far here. And last example. Imagine, so you see how absurd their actions are. Imagine if an Armenian student was a valedictorian at USC or any other college, and Turkish students complained and said, she might talk about the Armenian genocide, ban her. Because otherwise we might cause violence. There might be security issues, okay? So you have to ban the Armenian valedictorian. We don't agree. Imagine they say, oh yeah, of course, we don't want that. She might talk about the Armenian genocide or whatever it might be. And the Turks have objected. That's it, all you need is an objection, okay? So that's it, she's banned. Well, who else are we gonna ban? And tell me this isn't cancel culture. This is the definition of cancel culture. And you know who does cancel culture the most? The powerful. So if you're against the interests of the powerful, whether they're left, right, Israel, Palestine, whatever it might be, they're gonna cancel you. So no one should be on the side of the USC administrators here. This is an outrageous action against the literally the brightest student they have at USC. They don't even know what she's gonna say. Just on the fact that she doesn't hate Palestinians, they banned her speech because it might make some alumni uncomfortable. I find that disgusting. And by the way, to the Trojans for Israel, they said that her actions would be unwelcoming and intolerant. Number one, you have no idea what her speech is, but when you ban her, that seems pretty unwelcoming and intolerant.
100%, 100%, totally right. All right, we gotta take a break. When we come back for the second hour of the show, we're gonna talk about something that DeSantis signed that is awful. And this comes after I gave him some credit last week for signing legislation that I agreed with. So that and more coming up, don't miss it.